This is Pam. I'd like to go through it live on the air with Sharon Fillmore, a professional, basically your professional healthcare advocate, right? And life coach?
Yes. Some people
so
call me.
I want to welcome you to the family. Oh, yeah, good.
That's all right. Actually, it's really nice to be here. Thank you.
And you're kind of known as the Mary Poppins of family wellness. So we'll get in, we'll probably get into that backstory. But want to let people know that we're live on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch at this moment. And then also we can be listened to on Newsly. Anybody wants to check that out, you can use the coupon code of GHOST. We are a featured podcast on that platform. We'll be on there later tonight with an audio version of the podcast. One of the first things we like to ask anybody that's on the show is, like, what motivates you and why do you do what you do?
Well, that's what motivates me. All right. My whole life has been about helping people. My background started out as a registered nurse, and I do this because I have an opportunity to not just help an individual, but to help a family. So when I work with a mom or an entrepreneur, there's a trickle-down effect, and it helps the entire family instead of one individual person. And I think that's my motivation, and it's to help millions of people, as many millions as I can, to be better in the areas of their lives that they want to be better in. So my book has 9 areas that I believe if you have vitality in those areas, you will have a truly vital life. And what motivates me is actually the successes. All of the people that I work with that have had breakthroughs and that have been able to make changes in their lives and are now doing what it is they wanted to do. That's what motivates me.
So one of the things we want to talk about is, like, what you should really fear in your family is a kind of a focal point. But so maybe you want to maybe tell that particular point, and we can dive into some other aspects of your book.
All right. Well, it's difficult. Like, depending on how you term what should you really fear in your family, you can go through, like, the usual things. I think one of the big things is improper or lack of communication. Because when we don't speak to one another, when we don't hear each other and really try to understand what's happening in each other's worlds and lives outside of the home and inside of the home, and that can cause friction and problems later on.
Yeah, that sounds like an issue that a lot of people can understand. I guess in terms of how you handle it, in terms of family wellness, and like why you should care about certain things, and maybe what elements you should maybe pay attention to that you're not paying attention to.
Okay, I think that being sure that each individual person in the family is treated with dignity and respect, because dignity allows people to feel worthy. And when someone feels respected, they feel that they can speak their truth. And when you have those two things within a family, then people are not afraid to speak up and tell you what's going on. And then when you start to have open conversations, you'll find out about things like mental health issues that may be having a problem with your family, somewhere in your family. And we know that with the pandemic, there is an epidemic now of mental health. I think that's one thing. It can also circumvent some mental health issues, because sometimes it's about somebody listening.
Right? Yeah. I mean, having somebody to talk to is really important. And if you have a kind of hierarchical structure of your family, that's kind of top down, whoever is like dominant, you know, whoever is in that structure that's dominant, that basically kind of rules with an iron hand and said, well, you can't complain. Like, you should just be happy. You got to suck it up. You got to, like, they have a belief, and that belief gets pushed through the whole family, regardless of whether or not other people believe it. They might be just kind of told that's what you have. that's the way it has to be. So if you're in that kind of structure, then I could see there could be a lot of fear and issues within loathing within that.
That's true. That can create a lot. And the thing with beliefs is we develop our beliefs, most of them by the time we're five, but definitely by the time we're seven. Then after that, they just trickle in. And we develop our beliefs based on our situation, our environment around us, our parents, teachers, friends, anyone we come in contact with, and any situations that we might run into, right? And so it's about recognizing that two people come together, they have different beliefs. Some of their beliefs serve them and some of them don't. It's about looking at the beliefs and saying, okay, what serves me, what doesn't? You know, how can I change the ones that don't serve me anymore to ones that will serve me? And how do I make the beliefs for our family cohesive? So we both have the same beliefs and we can bring those to our, we can bring those to our children then. And then there's respecting the children's beliefs and saying, okay, helping them to understand that they've created a belief around something that, and it served them at the moment. However, you know, when you're 30 and 40 and 50, that you still have that same belief unless you make a change. It's no longer serving you, right? There's this thing that I like to say. So if you were sitting on an airplane and you saw this five-year-old get on the airplane and he was all dressed up in his captain's uniform and you saw the cockpit door open and him sit in the captain's chair and start giving orders, how long would it take you to get off that plane? So I say to people, you know, is your five-year-old still driving your plane?
Yeah.
No. It's one of the ways to look at it. So if you have a belief and you don't know where it came from, it's just there, it's time to sort of have a look at it and question it. You know, where does this come from and does it serve me? And do I want to keep it or do I want to change it?
It seems like a lot of times it's hard to be vulnerable and hard to be authentic if you've been told to kind of put on a mask. A lot of times we wear masks within our microcosm relationships and our macrocosm relationships. So whether or not you're in your direct family and friends, and then how you present to the outside world. And it can be kind of run by these belief systems or truths that you maybe believe or that are not truths, but they could be beliefs. And you've got this five-year-old concept and you're 30 and you're still running that. And it's not really suiting you anymore, but you haven't realized that you've hit that crucible moment that maybe you need to change. And this is when you have to find somebody to help you because you can't seem to help yourself change.
That's true. Very often people need help to change their beliefs. The first thing is recognizing that you have a belief that doesn't serve you. Next is deciding whether or not you're going to try and do it on your own or whether you're going to seek help. And it's beliefs are sort of an interesting thing. We all have many hundreds of them. And
now, within a family, sometimes individuals, they go for individual therapy. So you could have the head of the household going to individual therapy. And this kind of family wellness, is it recommended that each person kind of go and solve their individual problem or the whole family come in for an assessment?
It really depends on what the goal is. So if what you're looking for is to find peace and harmony within your family, maybe there's some things happening with your kids or your spouse, then it's better to sort of work with the two adults first and see what they see the issues are, and then bring the kids in and see what they believe the issues are. And then we can work from there. Often, though, I find that it's the mom that comes in and they're the ones looking for help. And so when you work with the mom, very often there's a trickle down effect. And I always encourage you to bring your families whenever you can. So,
yeah, because you're wondering with that dynamic, if there's any kind of dysfunction or some kind of issue, and it's, it might be the person thinks it's them, but maybe it's not actually all them.
Well, it's true. May not. It may not be. I find sometimes that people will come in and they do. They'll think that it's all their problem or all someone else's problem, and they'll say, "I'm trying to get, you know, my spouse to come in here and talk to you," but they won't do it. And when you talk to them, you find out, well, you know, the reality is, if you work on yourself and your spouse sees the improvement, they're going to want that improvement too. You know, they're going to want to be part of that. So then very often they will then come and talk to you, and we'll work out whatever it is they're looking for, because often you're both looking for the same thing. You both want the same thing. You just haven't been able to articulate it and put it into practice where both of you are congruent and good with it. Like, and it's like, there's many ways to get to the same destination. And sometimes couples are trying to go there and they're taking, you know, different roads. It's about getting them on the same path.
Now, what the abuse dynamic within a family structure is, there are a lot of credence to, like, that the previous, like, their family, their heritage that they come from. Like, if they were in a kind of a codependent relationship with their mom and dad before they got into their family structure, are they carrying over that?
Very often.
How much of that work has to get done? Because, like, if that family is still, like, the grandparents have that bad structure, and then you bring that family to family events and it has that dysfunction and they've never solved that, does that kind of re-injure anybody by going to that back into it?
You know what? That's a really good point. You bring your baggage with you. You know, may not see it, but it's dragging there behind you. And if you come from a family where there's been trauma, where there's been abuse, then it's important to sort of to release that and bring in some activities, some behaviors, and some thoughts that are going to serve you now. And so it's one of those things that if you two people come into a relationship. And what happens is you bring with you whatever you came with, whatever happened in your environment before, your family, your friends, and outside traumas as well. Like if somebody was involved in or even we need to look at individuals. So if I say an example is I saw a shooting on the street, it might cause PTSD for me, but if you saw it, it may not. And an example is if someone even heard about something happening, it might actually cause them to have some trauma as well. So we need to look at the individuals and what level, where they are in that trauma. Mm-hmm. Is it affecting them? Is it affecting their family? And the most important thing is, are they bringing it into their family? And
yeah. Hard for people to recognize that they've been in a trauma? Have they been pushing it down and they don't even recognize why they're in the state they're in?
You know, I'll tell you a story. I used to teach in healthcare. And one of the things I taught was that to recognize abuse and to recognize how it unfolds within a family and also within institutions, so that the students I was teaching would recognize it if they saw it. And every Monday, I always ask the students, did everyone have a great weekend? Does anybody have anything, you know, that they want to talk about? And one student stood up and she said, I left my husband on the weekend. And I said, you did? And she said, yes. After learning about abuse and the different kinds and going home and talking to him, I realized he's not going to change. So I have no choice. I have to leave. And it was wild. It's because she had been in this relationship for, at this point, probably 15 or 20 years. However, she didn't recognize it. Because sometimes when you come from an environment where there is abuse and you go into another environment and there is abuse, you don't see it as anything wrong because that was always your life before.
The norm. Yeah, it's your normal kind of like if you're in that codependent relationship, you just kind of seek, it's like a law of attraction. You know, law of attraction doesn't always bring positive people around you.
No,
law of attraction can bring negativity and positivity. So but people that might want to see the sunny side of it, but there's the other side of it. There's multiple sides of it.
There's multiple sides of it. It's true. You get what you put out. So if you come from a place where there's a certain behavior, then you're going to attract that behavior. It's just the way we are. And you may not recognize it at any time, or you may recognize it and decide that this is my lot in life, right? I have
or
to
it's comfortable, there. Right? Sometimes you could be comfortable with a bad situation because you fear the discomfort of not being in that situation is something you've never experienced, and that causes fear because you never experienced it. So you're more willing to deal with what you know, and what you know might not be that good.
But
you don't know any better, or you're scared of what could be better because you don't know what that feels like.
Sure. What is that saying? The devil you know or the devil you don't, right?
Yeah.
And so it's true. And what people very often live in relationships where they're both unhappy for long periods of time because of that. The fear of leaving is greater than the fear of staying. And it's usually the fear of the unknown. I know what's going to happen in this household. I know what's going to happen with this family. But if I leave, I don't know what's going to happen when I get out there in the world. And it's that fear.
Yeah,
and
all kinds of reasons. Yeah, I mean, because you don't know if you can afford it. You don't know if you can afford to leave. You don't know if you'll be able to be strong enough to be by yourself. You don't want to be by yourself. There's all these things that kind of start piling up to, like, it's harder.
It is hard. It's just, once you get out there and you know, the first few years are difficult and you get some help and you develop a support group or a support network, then I find that people that come out of abusive situations are usually much happier.
Yeah, it's hard to get past that first couple of steps, though, because there's like kind of all that weight you have to push through to get to the other side. And when you deal with, you know, a lot of times if you can break to the other side, you of course you find out, oh, I have breathing room now, or I feel like myself, or I actually can actualize to where I should be.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But it's like trying to get to that point. That's why I feel like you have to talk to somebody like yourself. And maybe we can kind of dive into like the title of your book, The Vital Link. Like, what is that? Well, how do you define that?
Okay, The Vital Link, it's about different areas in your life. If you have vitality, it will, you'll feel more vital. You'll feel more self-assured. You'll feel more worthy. You'll have respect for yourself, which is very important. You'll have belief in yourself, which is even more important in some ways. And so what I've done is I've taken 9 areas of our lives where if you have vitality in those areas, then you're just going to have all the best. And they include things like belief change. They include things like mindset. There's a lot on communication, as you can tell. There's on happiness. We live in a world where people are not happy. And so I talk about the foods that you can eat that help, you know, increase your dopamine and your serotonin and the activities. Talk about some of the things that you can do on a daily basis that are really simple, little things like, you know, watching cat videos. For some people, they laugh. And when you laugh, laughing is really fun because it not only increases your dopamine and serotonin levels, it actually works your muscles in your face. And a really, really good belly laugh will actually work your belly. It lowers your blood pressure. It helps you to see the world in a more positive way. And when you start doing that, you feel grateful. And once you feel grateful, it's like, do you see that snowball effect that these things happen? So these are all areas where if you have vitality, then you feel good about the world and you feel great. There's even a section on finances because it's something that we're not taught. We're not taught about money.
Yeah, that can cause a lot of unhappiness, because if you don't know how to manage your budget, that can cause the stress, and the stress gets you in a situation where, you know, what I've learned being in a family, you know, with my wife and my daughter, that instead of being like deadly serious about everything, like if I introduce a little comedy, a little humor, then the levity can help get rid of tension, get rid of stress. And the fact that we find things to, you know, watch comedy specials, watch comedy routines, go back and watch old Richard Pryor routines or something, just for us to kind of like, well, you watch CNN and then you get depressed. Then you're like, well, how do you get out of that thing where you get to be, you get too hooked on some of our social media capabilities that just send you lots of negativity. If you're just stuck on that negativity train, how do you get off of it? Like, how do you define happy? Right? Okay. Like, what's happy for each person is probably different things, but like, how can you be happy and healthy?
There's the old saying, you know, bad news gets front page, you know, a happy news is on page 6. And that's true. We always talk about the bad things. So I would say for some people, if they watch too much news, they can't separate that. So they may have to restrict the amount that they watch. Or the other option is balance it. So if you watch something on the news, be sure that you do something that's fun. Walking can be really fun, especially if you do it with more than one person. It can be lots of fun. There's people to talk with. You know, when my children were young, we used to go to a horse farm just to pet the horses, because they would come. And that made everyone so happy, because mm-hmm. they were out in nature and they were with animals. And so if you have a pet, pets are wonderful for, you know, helping you see the bright side, because they love you no matter what. They're always happy to see you. And just the act of spending time with a pet actually increases your happiness, lowers your blood pressure, and it gives you a feeling of love. Because let's face it, if you want to learn what unconditional love is, get a dog.
Yeah, my cat gives me a lot of love. My cat is a cat that likes to be touched and likes mm-hmm. to be held, which is a rare thing for a cat, but most cats don't like that. But our cat was like raised with a lot of dogs before we got her from a rescue. And she loves to be held. She loves to be with you. She just wants to be with you all day. So she helps me a lot.
You know, I'm sure she does. It's saying that cats are all you know, serious isn't always the case. My son has a cat and he likes to be carried like a baby. She puts him in the arm like a baby and he walks around with him. He loves it.
Yeah, it depends on the personality of the cat. Like, they're not all the same.
they're not all the same. And I have another friend who also, cat was raised with the dog. So when the doorbell rings, you know, that she runs to the door.
She wants to know what's going on. Yeah, it's like, it depends on like what's going on, how they were raised and what kind of environment they're in. And if you kind of, you know, include them. Like, if you don't kind of feel like, well, this, you're not supposed to be here, then they kind of go off to their corner because they feel like they're not supposed to. But if you're more welcoming, then they kind of pick up the vibes. I mean, what I noticed, we've had parakeets and we've had cats, and our parakeet loved to interact. We let her fly around, and she learned how to navigate the house because we trusted her to be able to do it, and she did it. And so then she didn't have to stay in the cage all the time. So we had a really good experience with her, because she could learn how to be in the house without causing trouble.
And did you notice how just having her be there and being part of your family raised your mood and helped you to feel about life? You're right. So I'm not saying everyone should get a pet. There's different ways you can, you know, borrow friends. You can, you know, go to the Humane Society, and you can do like we did. We went to a horse farm so that we could pet horses. There's so many.
There's a lot of cool things. Yeah.
There's a lot.
We live in New Hampshire, and there's a lot of farms. And so we go off to these farms where they have like goats and animals, and then they have ice cream, and then they have, you know, you go into the orchard and pick apples or pick peaches. And so you pick corn. You can do a lot of cool stuff at these farms, and there's animals and stuff too, and they show you how to milk the cows or milk the goats or whatever. It just is a cool thing, and you can walk the farm. And that in itself, like, we would go, like, after we went shopping, which was kind of stressful, to go shop our weekly shopping, we'd go to these farms in New Hampshire and just kind of, you know, get a little, like, shake off the experience of being in the crowded supermarket to go and actually have this happy thing. And we got used to it. It was kind of like our process to kind of de-stress from the shopping.
All the things you're doing multiple things at one time. Walking is really important for mental health and physical health. And then the animals, they always support it. Then you're together as a family, and just being together as a family and doing something common that you all enjoy also raises your spirits. And it's not just about happiness at that point. At that point, it's the inside, it's the joy. It's deeper than happiness, right? Joy is much deeper than happiness. And so it's creating this incredible joy. And those memories are the ones that will sustain you when you need them, is to think back and think, oh, like, you just talking about it, I can see your face lights up and you're smiling.
And right, it's just fun. You know, it's a good family outing. It's very positive. We're out in the fresh air. Makes it known why we live in New Hampshire. But the idea of just being able to be in that kind of environment, because we used to live in cities. We had lived in Tokyo. We had lived outside of Boston. And now we're kind of in the country. And we find that it just causes a lot, gets rid of the stress. Just walking in the pines, like you said, if I go walk the Merrimack River in this pine forest, I get a lot of restorative value from just doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, just walking in that and listening to the river, the Merrimack River, while I'm walking through this woods, I can actually see it and hear it. And that in itself, just the noise from the river, it's like listening to like a tape. People will go listen to like nature sounds, but if I go out there, I can actually hear the nature because I'm in it.
And listening to nature sounds is really helpful, is helpful. However, when you get to go out and be in nature and listen to the sounds while you're there, it's much more soothing, powerful. And more powerful. And you can feel everything has an energy, and everything emits an energy, whether it's a leaf, a tree, a person, bird, whatever. So when you're out there, you feel all that energy as well. And that energy is always very positive, right? Unless, of course, you're in a blizzard, but.
Yeah, but it's a different type of energy. But it's just fun. I mean, the restorative power of nature is something that people might not, doesn't cost a lot of money unless you don't live near it. That you have to get to it. Like, if you can't get to it, then you have to find other ways.
I'm sure that there isn't a city in North America that doesn't have a park close by.
Yeah. That's an option.
Going to a park would be great. A zoo, an animal zoo is always great. A petting zoo. They're always and you know, you don't have to have children to go to a petting zoo. You can go on your own. all of these things are super helpful. And another thing that people have difficulty with in our society is what we call getting into flow. It's so when you're doing something and you're kind of in the moment and you're just there, that's really
flow state type of stuff.
Yes, exactly. That is really important for creating happiness and joy. And in our society, because of our phones and our computers and all the things that are happening, we have a hard time getting into flow. And so if you have a hobby or something that you love to do, turn all your devices off and just be with the thing you love. And you will find that when you're done, you have this incredible feeling of satisfaction and feelings of happiness and of success. which is very important. When you get into flow, you get to do things you love and you feel successful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a musician, so I'm in the middle of my studio with all my keyboards and all my synthesizers and all my stuff. So I have a bedroom studio. I'm a bedroom producer. And I talk to a lot of other artists. My daughter's a graphic artist, and my wife is a playwright. So we're all like in the arts. And so the idea of this flow state, we kind of like, I've been around tons of artists and they all have friends that are artists. And the idea of, you know, I don't think that just an artist can be in that flow state. A lot of people can access it, but they don't feel they have a right to access it, because the arts have been kind of pushed to this thing, well, you have to be this level to be an artist, and you don't. I think all human beings are creative, and so you can get into a flow state and you don't have to be a professional pianist or a guitarist or a photographer. You can just do it for a hobby and use the art therapy to be cathartic. You just get into that flow and you let it go, you know?
Exactly. I mean, that's why art is one of the therapies. Dance is a therapy. Music is a therapy. And because they help you get into flow, and they give you a sense that you don't get anywhere else. And so it's interesting. I have a daughter-in-law who's in the music industry, and she's very much like that. It's when she's in her studio and she's in flow, it's like, well, I'll just sit outside and listen.
You don't even know, like if I get into a flow state on my piano, I could go like 3 hours and not even realize I went 3 hours. Mm-hmm. But just working on something that just popped in my head, because we kind of believe in the muse. So like a lot of artists, we feel like we can channel. And so like, whether you're a poet or an author, photographer, a painter, like I feel like I hit those keys and something came from somewhere. It's like internal and it's external. And it's like subconscious, it's like conscious, it's a lot of stuff. It's almost like a waking dream and you get caught up in it. And it's hard to, you know, I try to describe what it is, but that's kind of like when you're in it, you're kind of in this kind of trance, you know, you're just doing it. And if somebody wants you to explain what you just did, it's like, well, I don't know if I can, because I was in it.
And that's exactly what flow is. You're in it. And you're not really aware of anything else that's going on around you, because you're so focused on it. You're in the moment, and there's you see channeling, and that's a very, very cool statement, because you probably do channel without realizing it. And the thing with flow is that you can get to that state no matter what you're doing, right? So that's absolutely amazing. Now, do you find that when you're working with other people that you can get into flow as well?
Yeah. Well, I play with a lot of experimental kind of jazz type of artists. Mm-hmm. And we're at the point where like, we don't say the chords. We don't say what key we're in. We just do it. And so there's a lot of like nonverbal communication. Right? It's like my drummers play something, I just know what goes with it. Bass player knows what goes with it. Singer knows what goes with it. If we can make suggestions, but a lot of times we'll just go and we kind of know each other. We've got this kind of connection that's like, why that we're a band? Because we got together where we have a vibe. And if you bring somebody that's from the outside, they start asking like, what chord is that? And we're like, you don't feel it?
No. Some of that I think is because of your experience, and some of that is also because you're used to playing with the same people. It doesn't change the fact that you're in flow, and you're in flow in a group, which is even more powerful than being in flow on your own. And it's a very cool kind of, when you think about it, that you can be in flow in a group like that. That's really quite amazing.
Yeah, that's why I like to be a musician. You know, I don't even care if I earn any cash from these exercises. A lot of times we do it just because we love it. And that's where sometimes people in this kind of monetary based world is like, they don't see why you should do something unless you get a million views, unless you make X money. They like a lot. Sometimes in the arts, you do it because you like to do that art. And maybe it makes money, or maybe somebody likes it. But a lot of times we do it just because it's not a law of attraction. Eventually, there are people that get in tune with what we're doing, And sometimes they don't. It doesn't mean we're not going to do it just because they didn't get in tune. It's like we were in tune with each other, so we did it.
Exactly. And like you said, the law of attraction, you attract the people around you that have the same likes, that, you know, that have the same abilities. And then you send it out to the world and you will attract back the people that, you know, that need to be attracted to you, whether you're making money or not. You're sending something out and you're healing some soul because of being jazz, especially, so healing. And you're healing, helping heal the world that way.
Yeah, that's the way we look at it. You know, you just feel if you have a gift to share it. And so sometimes it's hard to understand some artists that like keep everything in their room and they never show it to anybody, because it's like, if you don't show it to anybody, then the whole world's missing out on what you have. And it's that vulnerability issue where you're scared to be vulnerable, so you just hold on to it. And like, well, nobody ever hears it but you, so that doesn't really help you, because it's not really, well, it can help you maybe personally work through something, but then you're hiding it from everybody else. So it seems like if you have to find a way to connect.
If you have a gift, it's important to share it. It's important to share it, not just for yourself, because when you share it, you get feedback and you get better, and you get encouragement and you get support. And then you help the people around you actually, you have viewers out there. How many people, when they're feeling down or they're feeling, you know, they need something, they crank up the music and they sing or they dance to the music and it just brings and elevates you up, right? Yeah. How many times do we want to go see a live band? Why? Because of the energy, right? Well, we want to go sit in our friend's garage or basement and listen to them play because it's heartwarming. Yeah. All of these things, and it's because you're sharing your gift, and all of those energies that you put out come back to you in tenfold. Right?
It's very important to you know, not be scared of the vulnerability of like the authentic self, and we have so many people that just want to clone what already has been done. Mm-hmm. Or just like, you know, and they're scared to be the authentic. To me, it's like, as a producer, I don't want to hear somebody play something that somebody else already wrote. I want to hear their authentic self. I always tell them, like, show me the song you're scared to show anybody, because that's really going to show me who you are, right? Instead of showing me that you can clone this other piece that everybody knows. Well, that person who wrote it probably did it better than you could ever do it. Maybe you might do it better, but I'd rather hear your original piece to kind of get a picture of who you are. Then I know how to help you.
And with music, for it to be good, it's about who you are. It's about your authentic self. It's about putting yourself out there and just saying to the world, I'm going to be vulnerable, I'm going to be authentic, and I hope you like it.
That's a hard thing, because you try to carry that over, you know, to the world, right? And then like, this is where, if you're talking to your teenager, right, and they're scared to talk to you because they're scared about what you're going to say, right? If you've made them feel that they can't be vulnerable with their father or their mother, mm-hmm. or anybody that's close to them, then you're never going to really know how to address the void, because you haven't made that space open. Like, I've tried with my daughter to make it like, you can say whatever you want to say, even if it's something about me that you don't like, right? And don't be scared to tell me, like, you know, my daughter's not scared to tell me what she doesn't like. Don't tell me, like, hey, Dad, you did this wrong, this wrong, this wrong. It's like, that's fine. Just tell me, like, I want to hear what you have to say. Where my pop, he didn't really want to hear that.
and that's a really important thing, is you recognize what you didn't want to bring in to this new family, and so you changed the way you behaved. So that's really important. And when you're talking to teenagers, it's difficult. They're not sure what to tell you, you know, what's safe to tell you, what's not safe. I have this thing I say, it's being matter of fact, so that whenever they tell you something, even if your insides are going, oh my God, I can't believe you did that, your outside is like, oh, and why did you make that decision? Really, it's you know, tell me why it worked, you know, did it work for you? You know, how do you feel about it now? And when you can say those things with a straight face, then they will tell you anything.
Yeah. Well, you gotta be very expansive. Like, and it's hard because if you've been taught, like from my parents, like they had these norms, mm-hmm. they had these like social, you know, structures that they were used to. My daughter is in this new age. She's 24, right? She's in this new age where a lot of things that grandpa and great grandpa, they don't like, right? They don't want to hear that. But this is my kids in the generation where my you know, that other generation, they don't want to hear any of it most of the time. And so I'm like, it's like I had to let that go and say, oh, that's what you guys were dealing with. Like, this is a different world. Like, my daughter's in this world, like you were in that world. It's like, I have to deal with where she is, you know, and I'm going to do what she needs.
And I think that you're right. If they have a different belief, they also want older people, their grandparents, to change immediately. And that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I realize that.
So it's about helping your kids accept them and helping them accept your kids. And it's not easy. I know somebody who was so down on computers and cell phones, and then but his wife always looked after that. And they're in their 70s, and unfortunately she passed away and he had to take over everything. And, you know, for the first year, it was tough. We, you know, we all helped out and taught him all kinds of things. But now he's wondering why he hated it so much.
Yeah, it's a whole different world. It's like, you know, there's the social mores and everything that people are into. And just the tech, you know, there's a lot of tech is like, some of the older generation didn't trust the tech. So I don't trust this email. I don't trust the net. I don't trust these things like Bitcoin. I don't trust this stuff. They just like, it's too new, too much. So it's like, how do you kind of gradually ease them in, you know, to this other world? You can't be like overnight, like everything you knew was wrong and this is the new way. Like, you have to kind of baby steps.
It's true. It's baby steps. And it's helping them to understand that we're in constant change, whether you believe it or not. You're in constant change, you know, whether it, even if you think fashion changes, your car changes, you know, when Henry Ford came out with the first, you know, horseless carriage, people said it would never catch on.
Right? Yeah, that's terrible. They didn't like it, you know.
Yeah. And what about computers? They said, oh, well, people won't have computers in their home. There's no way. I don't know anybody that has only one computer in their home. You know, it's like everything else. Change happens. You're not going to prevent it. It's just finding a place where you can be comfortable and keep moving forward. Right?
I think change is scary to some people because it's always like you're going to get replaced. You know, or what I like to do is now replace. So if you're somebody like, I like to read physical books, but now people don't read the physical books. They read them off their Kindle, or they read them off their iPad, or they read them off their phone. And so there's like the kind of art of reading the physical book is like some people don't like it, right? But the tech is going to this place, you know, people are reading them inside of glasses, inside their VR and stuff. It's like, there's all these new fangled ways of doing things. It doesn't mean you can't still like some of the old things, but no. There is this kind of like the balance of like, there's the world's expanding, there's all these new things. You can be fearful of AI, you can be fearful of robotics, you can be fearful. I mean, it's like the assembly line that was scary.
Oh my goodness.
Compared to people who were just hand building things. And they said, well, that's going to take away all these jobs that were created, new jobs.
Exactly. Well,
AI, is the same thing.
Exactly. And well, even think of, you remember the environmental movement? I mean, it was like, I remember I was a teenager and I was involved in the environmental movement in our community. And we had our major employer, one of the VPs sat in on one of our meetings and said, if you guys continue with this, all your parents are going to lose their jobs. And it was such fear tactic. But the reality is they created so many more jobs.
There's new ways to do that. You have to recycle, reuse things. I mean, this throwing chemicals into the river, that might be cost productive for you. It's not, when the cancer starts showing up, that's not so cost productive.
And so everything new coming out, there's always resistance at first. And then there's acceptance, and then people embrace it. I'm a little on the crazy side. I usually embrace it right away. I'm like, oh, this is wild. Let's try it.
Well, the thing is, like, for every new type of idea, like, you know, for every new AI concept, whether there's coders that have to code that, there's tools that they get created, there's, like, you know, all these drones that they have to get repaired. The people have to learn how to fix them. They have to learn how to, you know, deal with them and navigate them and control them. And so there are new types of jobs. And the thing is, the fear is, like, you were trained on job X. Now there's job Z. Mm-hmm. You have been trained on job Z. So you can't just stay at job X. You have to kind of move. And that's where, like, assistance might have to happen, because the people are so fearful of the new technology. You need to kind of be taught, like the first assembly line workers had to get taught to how to use the machine. But they probably didn't like that machine because they were doing it by hand. And eventually they had to learn how to use that machine.
Yeah. And then they decided that it was so much easier to use.
Is this the fear factor? And then finally realizing that you can become an expert at using the machine, or you can be a different type of artisan. You can learn different things.
I think that changing the mindset of, we're lifelong learners. We're always going to be learning something new and doing something new. And it's having that mindset of understanding that everyone is learning something new every day, and even if you don't realize it. So you are changing, and you are getting ready for that new position, you know, the new technology you bring in your home, you know, whichever happens to be happening. Like, you're, when you believe that you're going to be learning, always learning something new, it's easier to accept the new things coming out. Because, you know, I'm going to learn about it.
Right? I think a lot of people think, get stuck in a trap, is like, I got this certificate, I got this degree, I'm here. Mm-hmm. But then the world shifts. Like, I'm in software design. And what we did in 1990 is not what we do today. No, we use mainframe computers, and now we use a blockchain, and now we're using AI. And in my business as software design, is exponential changes in our industry. So whatever you knew 2 years ago is useful, but you have to relearn it, like everything. Everything's, you're constantly, like, you're going and having, like, BA level stuff, master's degree level stuff, having to relearn everything. If you want to stay in the game in IT, it's like, you have to relearn to survive.
Exactly.
And we're kind of forced to do it because we're in it. But if you're, like, I think the rest of the world needs to kind of understand, is like, you never, it never, you know, till I'm not here, I'm always learning. You know, everything I'm doing, I'm learning until I can't learn anymore, until I physically can't do it, mentally can't do it. Other than that, I'm going to keep on learning until I can't get any more in my head.
And that's the best attitude to have, because if you're willing to keep learning, then you're always moving forward, you're always improving yourself, and you're always developing new ideas, and you're more creative. And, you know, it's our creativity and it's our ability to think outside of the box and be free thinkers that have created the magnificent world we have today.
Yeah, I think the limits are, like, people like to be in the box. Or maybe they don't think they like to be in a box, but they put themselves in a box.
Yeah, people put themselves in a box and they don't realize that they have until somebody tells them to get out of the box.
Yeah, and I think that's, like, in the family. Like, you could be in your, like, microcosm box where you have, your problem where you have imposter syndrome, you never got out of it. You're kind of perpetuating, you're continually bringing it, reinforcing it. Until you get out of that, you're not really going to progress. You're going to keep on recycling it until at some point it's not going to be doable. And so you have to talk to somebody like yourself.
Yes, actually, that's true. And I'm always open to talk to people. I offer 30 minutes of free sessions if somebody wants to find out whether or not they would like to work with me. And I can usually help you solve one or two problems during that time. And if that's not for you, I have an education program and I have group coaching. I have something for you. That's for sure.
What are some key lessons learned that you can take from your book, like high level? Don't want to give it away, but if you're going to have like maybe three lessons learned high level that wouldn't take away from reading the entire book, but kind of give you an example.
Okay. So some we've already talked about happiness, doing something every day that makes you happy. Waking up every morning and just say, today's a new adventure. I'm going to enjoy it. Those are things that are really important for you for every day. As far as talking to people, treat everyone with dignity and respect. And I have this thing that I do. So when you run into a situation where something happens, you don't know what to say, I have this thing I call it, I wish I coined it, but I didn't. It's called stop, drop, and roll. And so we have something called your unconscious mind. Your unconscious mind kind of sees and hears everything, and it comes back when you need it. So what I do is I imagine I'm planting my feet and I just ask, what's the best thing to say at this time in this moment? And I would say, I don't ever remember my unconscious mind or suddenly getting the idea of what I should say. And it's usually the very thing that you should say. And then mm-hmm. you just roll it out. So that's stop, drop, and roll. So that's, I use that a lot for people that are going into conflict situations or that it's really good when you're talking to a teenager because they say things and sometimes you go, and so if you can remember to do that, you will always remember what to say. And it'll also give you time to do the matter of fact kind of face so that they don't get afraid to tell you what they want to tell you. And walk every day, even if it's only 10 minutes, go for a walk.
Yeah, that's good advice. There's a lot of good things. Cause I think what you've been talking about the whole time is a lot of good advice, but how to respond, and not get triggered is a good, a lot of what you've said is like high level, that kind of end result. Mm-hmm. It's like, because a lot of times people, they don't understand their triggers or they haven't done an analysis to figure out like, how come somebody does this and you go off the handle and they haven't done like the self analysis to figure out why that is going on.
And the reality is most people don't, they don't think of that. However, if you learn this technique, you'll stop that behavior. And once you stop the behavior, you'll be asking yourself like, why did I do that? So you're elevating your thought processes and your creativity as you go, right? It's mm-hmm. it's like, you know what, I'm learning to not explode and to come out with the right thing to say. And then it goes like, why was I not doing it before? And what were my triggers? Once you figure out your triggers, you can either just let them go. Very often you just let them go because you know about them now. And if that doesn't happen, it looks into, okay, there's a belief behind there that I need to investigate, right? Because there's always a belief behind your trigger, right?
Well, sometimes people feel like they got to win, like, and sometimes you need to kind of let go.
Right? Exactly. So the question is, why do you always have to win?
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, why we had to win every single, like, part of a conversation. Why was it even something that you even were supposed to win? Maybe you were just supposed to listen, right? Exactly. Maybe you weren't supposed to try to win an argument. It was something somebody was telling you that's actually their feeling. And it's not about you. It's about them. But you turned it into about you.
Yeah. And then it's also looking at that and going, okay, why do I make it about me all the time? What is my insecurity that's creating that? Right? Because it's very often it's an insecurity that creates that. Knowledge is power. I'll just sort of give you an example of my own. I went to a personal development program when my youngest one was two, and it was the first one I'd been to. And I had done all kinds of research on parenting because I came from a dysfunctional family, and I knew that unless I changed the way I did things, I would bring it. So I went to this personal development, and I remember sitting there at the end of 3 days, and I was like, oh my God, I had no idea I thought this way. I had no idea. And it was the start of my journey. And when I look back now, I'm so grateful for that opportunity, even though I kept shaking my head all through. I thought, oh my God, I'm like that. I do that. Oh my God. It was the best thing because it educated me to know that, you know what, I was good, I was okay, and I could change things if I wanted to. And I chose to.
Yeah, it's hard to do that. It's self-analysis. It's kind of like poets used to talk about, like the looking glass self. And can you really handle the looking glass self and the kind of analysis and vulnerabilities that come from that, right? When knowing that you're not always going to be right, knowing you're going to find your like things that you've erred because you're human, you're going to make errors, you're going to make mistakes. It's not the end of the world to admit your mistakes and figure like, well, you know, that was yesterday. Today I can try to do better.
Exactly.
Right? And, exactly. You know, that's a hard concept to get through because some people are still holding on to what happened yesterday instead of like, okay, I can learn from that, but am I going to be owned by that? Or am I going to learn from that?
And that's a really great point, you know, because when you live in yesterday, yesterday's owning you. When you live today in the present, then you own yourself.
That's a good way to think about it. Mm-hmm. I do love the conversation we've had. It's been really illuminating, but I haven't maybe mentioned your link there. It's a Calendly. It says the Vital Link Mentor. So if you click on that, is that how you people make an appointment with you?
Mm-hmm. That would be great. Actually, you can click it and make an appointment and we'll talk and we'll find out what I can do for you. Let's see. And I'm sure that I'll be able to help you in some way. And if I can't, I will always find someone who can.
So I want to let people know that it's fully clickable. You don't have to remember that. When we are published on all the platforms, you'll be able to click through and get right to that link. So you don't have to worry about trying to remember it. But, you know, for those of you looking at it right now, just wait to our episode. Once we're done with our Facebook Live, that will be clickable on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch, and all the other platforms that we're going to be on. But thank you again for being a guest on the Fam Electric Ghost podcast. It's always great to talk to people from around the world. I enjoyed this conversation. And like I said, we'll be fully published. We were live on the channels I mentioned. And I hope you have a good night.
Thank you. This has been great. And I really appreciate the opportunity. And to everyone out there, I hope you have enjoyed this.
Thank you.